Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 45 of Tech to Go. I'm here with my regular three co-hosts. I have Randy Johnston, principal of K2 Enterprises. Welcome, Randy.
And thank you, and welcome to all today.
And also Renee Lassert, the CEO of Bill.com. Welcome, Renee.
Thanks, Darren. Good to be here.
And it's always great to have Dave McClure, the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. So welcome again, Dave.
Good morning, all. It's a pleasure to be back.
Guys, we've got some good topics for today. We're going to talk a little bit about QuickBooks 2011, which I just got in the mail on Friday. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with Bill.com, so hopefully Renee has some insight there. I know they've been beta testing some accounts receivable things, and rumor has it that there's a new BlackPad coming out from BlackBerry. So we can talk a little bit about that and then anything else you guys want to talk about. So let's just kick off. Renee, tell us what's going on with QuickBooks. I guess I should ask Randy, since you're going to talk a little bit about Bill.com, Renee. Randy, what's going on with QB 2011?
Well, Intuit has released their annual update. The feature list was actually fairly short for this particular version. We did see a bit more conversion of the QuickBooks 2011 PC or Windows version and the Mac version. So that convergence continues to take place with this particular iteration. But again, from a we'll just call it a laundry list of things that are new. Not tons in this particular release. So, you know, as you and I have looked at what it'll impact on our clients, I just don't see notable changes for this version.
You know, there's, you know, as I look at the list, Randy, there's you know, some enhanced built-in reports, which are nominal. Track inventory in multiple locations, okay, that's kind of nice. You know, some templating invoicing. Well, okay. You know, there's just not a lot. Some little bit with the company snapshot, but really there's not a whole lot in here.
Yeah,
there are a few things that I thought were interesting. Maybe you guys don't think they're as interesting, but they kind of relate to Bill.com. So one of them was they did this, they're opening up the database into the cloud, right? So there's the ability to get your customer center kind of on the web. So you can be in, you know, you can have somebody in the office working in the customer accounts and somebody who's on an iPad using the web interface and being able to see in the same customer record. So to me, that was interesting. And then also they've started focusing on payments and they have the Intuit payment network they're trying to do. So to me, those were, you know, interesting, topics. Did you guys look at those at all?
Yeah, I had actually looked at those, Renee, and had also thought about it from the let's just say other people's applications integration, because I thought it was interesting to drag along Yahoo, Gmail, Hotmail, as well as Google Documents when you start thinking about the online pieces that they were doing. Then the one other item that is in the product, but I want to put it in with a bit of a caution, was the balance sheet by class. Intuit worked to get that added in this particular version. I actually know that some of the original conversations came from my team, but there are indications that not everything in the balance sheet by class is doing what it should at this point. So even though it's one of the four major call-outs, just a caution that it may still not act quite like you'd expect it to act.
Well, that's a tall order when you think about every single AR that goes in and every single AP that goes in has to be classed.
Yes.
In order to get that to work appropriately.
And I think that's actually part of the issue here is not everything is classed quite right, so it's close to solving the problem and would solve it for some situations, but I don't think it will solve it for all. So I just didn't want our listeners to, you know, recommend and use that feature blindly without, you know, looking at the numbers themselves, making sure that it worked for that particular client or situation.
Well, another thing that I know that was in there was the ability to launch two sessions of QuickBooks at the same time. So you could open two companies. Actually, you just launch QuickBooks twice, but it caps it twice. But what I've heard, I think Doug Sleater was telling me that, you know, if you do launch the second instance, then some of your integrated services, some of the things, some of your vertical apps all of a sudden cease to know how to act in that environment. So that'll be a little bit of an interesting twist too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a customer issue this weekend because of that. So, and, you know, we spent, you hate to do this, we probably spent, I had, you know, three or four members of my team spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours this weekend solving a bug that QuickBooks introduced.
Yeah.
It wasn't, and nothing that we could do. It actually had something to do with basically what had happened. And just, if our listeners are paying attention to this, if you install QuickBooks 2011, make sure nobody is in QuickBooks 2010 when you do that. Because what happens is some DLLs that run in the background got corrupted. But, I mean, I think there's plenty of issues with your point, Darren, around the vertical apps that probably Intuit hasn't figured out yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, Randy, the thing I'm sitting here thinking as I looked at this new release is something that Renee mentioned. You know, we're trying, or Intuit seems to be trying to extend the desktop version out to the web to a degree so that we can still hang on to our desktop version and we can play with apps on the web and our iPads and maybe our black pads and all these different things. At the same time, they're continuing, I would assume, to work on QuickBooks Online. Where do you see all that starting to shake out? Any ideas?
Well, I'm not sure I've got the greatest idea on this, but you know, my vision of where this might be headed is that the desktop application over time really becomes retired. We go dominantly, if not fully, to the web, or at least synchronized. And when you start picturing that all efforts and all roads are leading to this web-enabled or web-hosted or completely web-based version, that could be a long-term trend here. And, you know, I understand why publishers want to maintain their legacy applications, and I understand why there's market pressure to cycle versions quickly and so forth, but I do ask, you know, all publishers to kind of think about their end consumers in these processes, what's really in the best interest of the customer business in addition to their own businesses. You know, how do we want to run this? How do we need to run it? What's really effective? I know for me, sometimes getting access to the web is tough, and I'm pretty technically literate at doing so, but I'm traveling enough that it's just hard. For others of you that are listening, perhaps, you know, maybe your life is back and forth between the office and a home, and you have web access almost everywhere you would go, or your customers do too. So, you know, I don't want to have my own goggles the filter on this.
Yeah, you know, but I can speak from just all the customers that we have. You know, the web does allow them more flexibility to do whatever they want, wherever they want. So I think that is where things are going. And the question will be whether Intuit can migrate its 3.5 million, 4 million QuickBooks customers to that platform. You know, at the same time, they're trying to get this annual. You know, they have a lot of issues and challenges, I think.
But you know, we were just talking. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I just want to interject. The problem with that, wasn't there a company called Intuit that was like offline for 2 or 3 days this year?
Yeah, I was going to.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with migrating to an only online solution is if you can't go online, you've got no commerce. You've got, I mean, what do you do with your company? I mean, the businesses I work with can't go 3 days without writing vendor checks, or their vendors are going to say, well, we won't deliver anymore. So
yeah,
there is a balance between the needs of the software companies and the needs of the consumer who's using the product. I love the trend toward going online. I hate the fact that we've shortened the development cycle from 2 to 3 years down to 1 year. And I sat with the Intuit guys, and I went through a presentation on the 2011 version, and it's a fine version. It's a good piece of software, except for a few little bugs that can happen with any development cycle. But the bottom line is this. Why do they have to do this release? It's just because They need a continuing stream of revenue, and that's where you've got to have the balance, I think. I'm just a little nervous about taking it all online.
So I mean, obviously, Dave, I'm going to have to disagree with that because I just feel there's too many advantages for customers and for the software developer. I mean, talk about a release cycle of 1 year. Ours is only 1 month. 4 to 6 weeks is what we typically push new software out. And the advantage for the customer is, and we'll talk about some Bill.com stuff, they're getting new features real time that they can move with their business. They don't have to wait for the whole next year to and we sell the service, not so much the software. We say that, you know, you're going to be able to get support, you're going to be able to do your transactions through the back. All these things we're charging for the service, not for the software. The software just enables us to get people interested in our service.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with a monthly service fee, Renee. I truly don't. That's sort of like, you know, I pay a monthly service fee to the bank to get their service too. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with having to spend hundreds of dollars for an all-new version of the software on CP.
I completely agree with you. That's why when I started PayCycle and Bill.com, I didn't make them software companies. I made them service companies. I mean, I felt when I was at Intuit that this was just wrong. I think my first aha on this was back in 1996, and I'm thinking people aren't going to want to pay annual fees forever for upgrades that really aren't material. Now, you know, I think the question is, you know, what are people willing to pay for? And if you sell service, then they'll pay for service. So, you know, it's a different mindset, and you have to have features and functionality that support the service, and that's what we do at Bill.com.
Well, Renee, you know, just to back that up, I'm sitting here looking at my 2011 version, and it came in a nice box, and it's packaged inside nicely, and I got this whole kit, and you know, the U.S. Post Office or FedEx or somebody delivered it, and I'm sitting here thinking about all the costs that went in to ship me this CD for what I would consider a relatively small feature set increase. It just seems like a bit of a crazy model. It's like you keep doing the same thing over and over, and so much of the money went towards just the packaging and shipping as far as the upgrade.
And don't even talk about the staff that they have on board to be able to make those minor adjustments, right? I mean, the QuickBooks engineering team is huge.
Yeah.
And the design team in the background that has to design the box, my God. When I was working back at the old, God forbid, it's been a few years, the old company CP8, we spend enormous money just designing the literature and the box. And all that has to be paid for.
Well, Randy, you can remember. I mean, I remember back when Thompson, every time they did an upgrade, you got new CDs and manuals out in the mail. And I always thought, my goodness, what a challenge. And they went to an all-electronic delivery model, which seems to make perfect sense to me. Even though you still have on-premise software, it's still it's an electronic delivery model versus getting all this stuff in the mail.
Yeah, and in fact, maintaining the libraries electronically seems to be so much more intuitive. Admittedly, you have to have connection speed capable of doing that, but really most of us do at this point. So the physical distribution days, I think, of the software are about over. The ideal model to me is more of what is done with Google Gears or you know, some of the Adobe products that are working this way, where you can have a local copy that's automatically synchronized with a web copy, and you can work in offline mode when you need to, but when the Internet is available and you have access, it actually works in the online mode, so you get kind of the best of both worlds. It's not a particularly easy methodology to develop for, but you know, most of the people who have built these large-scale web products are telling me that it seems to be working pretty well for them.
You know, you guys all know Doug Sleater very, fairly well, and Doug made a statement at a conference he and I were teaching at a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was really valuable. He said, you know, if QuickBooks Online had any other name and was produced by any other vendor, we would all think it's a great application. But because it says QuickBooks, we compare it to the desktop version, and it doesn't match up quite yet. What's your take on that?
You know, I do think it's a great application. So I would probably agree that, you know, and I think part of the design issue, unfortunately, was that they wanted it to be compatible with QuickBooks Windows originally when they designed it, and that actually limited a lot of the capabilities of the product. until in the last year where they've fixed some of those things. So, I think they have 200,000 plus customers on it, and it's definitely the largest cloud application out there. So, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, Ray, do you see the continued big development in the QuickBooks Online area?
Well, I think the product is actually going to have to be replaced. It was designed in the late 90s, and the technologies have only been upgraded to a small degree. And I think it will become a major product. In fact, if we could just think about a morphing occurring, a change occurring right now, to accommodate the Intuit provider platform, the IPP, and desktop QuickBooks and online QuickBooks merging into a single code base that's synchronized up into the cloud using IPP, that would be my vision of the future. So I really do see QuickBooks Online and QuickBooks Desktop going away for a synchronized through IPP platform. I don't know if that's Intuit's vision of the world, but I can see how
I think that works. Yeah, I think their vision is to get all the data in one place, right? And then once they have the data in one place, then they can figure out what to build. So, whether QuickBooks Online or some, successor, if they can get people to get their data in the cloud, then they can start offering applications of pretty interesting opportunities.
Well, needless to say, they have their work cut out for them. That's a tall order.
The only thing I don't want to speculate is I don't want to speculate that QuickBooks may be attempting to move out of the small business niche to take on some of the larger enterprise applications head on, because I wrote that in a column last year, Darren, and I had the QuickBooks people all over me.
I bet.
What made me think that was their strategy, and where did I get that information? And I said, guys, I'm just sitting here looking at how robust you're making your product. It seems to me it won't be long before you're going after Microsoft Dynamics. And they said, hush, be quiet.
Yeah, don't say that.
So I just want to go on record as I'm not saying that.
So Renee, there's this great app out there called Bill.com that I use quite a bit. Tell me what's going on in Bill.com's world.
Well, a lot of great stuff. And the first thing, just kind of back to this disk in the mail, just as a reminder for folks, if you're on Bill.com, you never have to figure out how to upgrade. It just happens for you one day. Middle of the night on a Saturday night, you log in Sunday, and everything's there. You don't have to worry about corrupting data files or getting something in the mail and taking the time to install. So that's one of the beauties of the web. So some things that we have going on right now is we've had the accounts payable application out for a couple of years, and we're now in a beta mode for accounts receivable. And the accounts receivable is quite interesting because we're focused again on the process for our customers, not so much the any particular aspect. So invoices can be created in QuickBooks or in the cloud. We synchronize with QuickBooks all the information. Once we have the invoice, we then let you enable your customers to have a portal view of all the invoices that they have due. They can then pay electronically for as cheap as 49 cents. And you can get the funds electronically. With that, we create a dashboard so you can kind of see what collections you have due in the next week versus the next 2 weeks and stuff like that. So that's kind of the accounts receivable stuff that we've been working on. In addition, we've got a beta product for Peachtree integration, and I expect there'll be some other integrations such as NetSuite coming out before the end of the year. So there's plenty of stuff going on. And I think, Darren, have you had a chance to play with the accounts receivable yet?
I have not played with accounts receivable yet. Is that going fairly well for you so far?
The customers, what they love about it is the fact that, if you're used to creating your invoices in QuickBooks, you can now have them all in one place and have a customer dashboard to manage all your different customers. We have one client, for example, that's got a bunch of homeowners associations, and he's got maybe 25 different customers that they're doing billing through, and all the rentors and the different homeowners, they just log into the portal, see the invoice, and pay. And
there's
no going through any payment gateway or anything. It's just, the way you set up the payment is an email. When you send the email to the customer, they can set up their own account and get going.
I think I want to take a look at that.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, and there's lots more coming, which I can't quite talk about yet. But maybe by the time we have the next call, I'll be able to.
Dave, tell me about the Black Pad.
Well, the rumor is the Black Pad's going to be released at the developer conference, the BlackBerry Developer Conference, and it does look to be a very competent and accomplished. If you're a BlackBerry addict, a CrackBerry, this is going to be a very familiar interface for you. I think it has a lot of potential. I'm a little confused as to why it has to have two different cameras built in, but it appears one is like a still camera and one's a video camera. It's got a 7-inch screen. What I've seen of it so far looks fairly impressive. I have a few deeper questions. It's obviously Bluetooth and Wi-Fi enabled, but there's no 3G or 4G capability. These days, given the sad state of Wi-Fi in terms of security when you're on the road, I rely almost exclusively on 3G and 4G just for the security features in it. So I think this is probably a mistake on their part that they're going to have to correct in version 2. The other thing I have to wonder is, how seriously big is the market? They're supposed to be making, you know, like 250 million units or some such thing in production now. And maybe I estimated that too high. I think it's actually 25 million units they've got under production. But the bottom line is this. How many of you went out and bought an iPad, and how many of you still use it for business? I know, Randy, you had one for a while, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. As it turns out, most of our team actually has iPads, and we're evolving our business use. In fact, yesterday I was actually working on a grid of business applications for the iPad, and I have not found as strong of use inside the CPA firm as I would have expected initially, but I'm getting more applications as we go. And so if I'm right on the call, what will happen is there's going to be situations where it does make sense to use. Dr. Bob from our team did a complete SAS 70 audit in the last 2 weeks on the iPad only, which was his first attempt to really do field auditing of that class.
I think it has some potential there, but I'll tell you, I talked to a number of people who jumped on the iPad very early, who are now back to carrying laptops because they said, you know, the keyboard issue was a big issue for them. They said it just was too difficult to get serious work done on that keyboard. And I think that the Black Pad's going to have the same issue. Renee, what's your take?
Well, I'm not sure because the difference between the Black Pad and the iPad is going to be size, right? And when
right.
I felt a complaint. I had an issue with the, I would agree with you, Dave, with the iPad until I actually bought the carrying case. And when I bought the carrying case, and you can elevate the back, you know, an inch and a half, whatever that distance is, I can now type as fast on that as I can on my keyboard. I mean, my kids will walk up, and they couldn't believe it. It's like, you're typing it. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like a typewriter. I mean, it really does, you know, it takes a little bit of practice, but I can, if I have it elevated, I can type as fast on that as I can type. And so I use it. I would go to conferences, and I use it and take notes, and it's great. So I think, I mean, there's still plenty of room to go on, you know, making it more usable and stuff like that. But it's, I have to say, I found it pretty amazing.
Yeah, these new potential smaller iPad, in other words, the one that's about between the iTouches that were introduced 2 weeks ago and the current iPad, that size model could make a difference. For me personally, I can't type on my iPad as quickly. It actually hurts my hands, and the weight of it for me is a problem, so I can't actually hold it as well. And that shouldn't apply to all of our listeners here, just because I have physical problems with my hands, but I actually had an attendee in Pennsylvania last week who told me that they had bought one, but they had arthritis and couldn't hold the device. So you have to watch the weight of the iPad. And oddly enough, my iPad is heavier than my netbook. So,
yeah, well, and I think that's I don't use the iPad in bed. So, you know, so to speak, I don't like to read because it's too heavy to hold up and read a magazine glider, right?
Yeah.
So,
but
so
you know, the Flipbook application on it has really been a huge boon to me in terms of organizing all my different sources for news and for RSS feeds and all the other social media feeds into a single place. That's been a godsend that I've really enjoyed on the product.
Well, gentlemen, anything else? Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'll volunteer to bite the bullet because I'm a true crackberry. So I'll buy the bullet and go out and actually buy the black pad and see, because I've had a chance to play with the iPad. I'll see what I can work up for a comparison between the two by the next time we meet.
That sounds great, Dave. I'd like to know your experience.
Maybe, Darren, what we ought to do is have a little contest. You give us a little letter ahead of time to type, and we all have to type. You tell us to type, and you ever can get the email to you ahead of time.
There you go. Well, I've decided that Dave is as addicted as we are. He's just addicted to different things.
That's right.
So he's addicted to the crackberry.
That's why I like the discussions with him. I always learn something new.
Well, guys,
at least we didn't talk Segway.
That's right. great discussion today, guys. Thanks so much for taking the time. Look forward to talking to you guys next month. So have a great one.
Thank you. Everybody do the same.
Thanks.
Y'all. Bye-bye.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.